Five, four, three, two, one. I'm John Miglosh with the Wisconsin DMA and the International Society for Strategic Marketing. Well, let's see a perfectly good illustration of digital advertising. Here we go.
We are thrilled. We finally found our dream home in the mountains.
Views are great. The air is fresh. It is bear country, though.
Hey, boo-boo, we hit the jackpot.
Bear. Bear, bear.
Look, corn on a cob.
Ooh, chicken. Don't mind if I do.
You're hungry.
T-bone. That's what I call a smorgasbord.
At least Geico makes bundling our home and car insurance easy.
They do save us a ton of money.
We'll take the cobbler to go.
Good idea, Yogi.
Now I'm smarter than the average bear.
They're gone, Dad.
For bundling made easy, go to geico.com.
Okay, so there we see a great application of integrating digital with film where we can bring Yogi the bear back to life, who, you know, had catchy sayings like Yogi Berra. If you come to a fork in the road, take it. I'm not sure if that is connected or not, but I think it was way back somewhere. Okay, now we're going to go to the serious stuff. Okay, serious, only totally serious stuff. Okay, so here we go. This was a pretty good article by Ray Schultz. And Ray's a longtime industry veteran and that I respect a lot and helped me get into publishing some articles and stuff way back in the day. So the idea is that newspaper print design is misapplied to digital. And it's not 100% clear exactly where this, you know, what, you know, is there test data? It's not exactly clear. But for example, the Washington Post kind of looks like a newspaper, right? But unlike a newspaper, well, for one thing, a newspaper is, you know, like multiple times wider than your average person is looking at on their phone, especially. And so by using a multi-column format, which is a long-time traditional newspaper, it may actually detract from the readability of digital. I think that's absolutely, absolutely right. The design of print newspaper developed gradually over generations, largely before the advent of current human-centered theories of perception and design. I would also say that this applies even more so to that one from Yo, yeah. thanks for the comment, Ed. Yeah, the ballparks are so crowded, people are staying away in droves. I know, I got a lot of Yogi Berras. And my favorite, and this applies to this show, in theory and practice are the same, but in practice they're different. You get a lot of practice here. Okay, so current human-centered theories of perception and design. You know, what publishers have imposed the mental models of print onto the digital news sites, and that was done without acquiescence to the vast differences between print and digital media. The change also resembles the transition from analog to digital flight instruments. Now, interesting part is I was in the middle of that. When I started flying in the right seat of little planes, we would navigate by tuning in WTMJ, a pretty high-powered radio station, not that far from where we live. Maybe 30 miles, where their antennas were about 30 miles from Watertown, where we were usually trying to go, or Waukesha, they were really close. And so I saw that the entire progression into digital flight instruments. But before that, I was in sales in digital and analog temperature, pressure, and flow monitoring and control. And what was interesting about this, and I gave a talk in Chicago at Data University a long time ago about context. What was interesting about this was if in the old days of nuclear power plants, for example, or a coal power plant, they would take the analog gauges and they would specify them so that basically every gauge would be in roughly the middle of its range at the expected performance of the power plant. so that when you walked into the room, you'd see a whole wall of gauges. But every one of them, if everything was running right, was vertical. Okay? And then, if there was something wrong, one of them would be chunked down low or way up high, and you could quickly spot where the problem was immediately. Then we started going to digital output, and digital, had a couple of silly applications. One was you could go to seven digits. I remember selling a mag meter or looking at a mag meter line that we implemented. Mag meters check the deflection of the magnetic field. They make a magnetic field. And by checking the deflection, they can actually understand the flow of water through a big pipe. And it's especially good for like sewage treatment plants where you don't really want to touch whatever's going through the pipe. You just want to know how much of it's going by. And so the mag meter came with like one or two digits, just a couple, and then no decimals. You know, what's the flow, you know, what's the gallons per meter or gallons per hour or whatever it was, suspect that. And I asked him about that, and they said, yeah, when we first came out with this, we had like three digits. And people upstream would be trying to adjust the flow and making a mess of the whole power plant because they'd sit there all day, basically. It's like trying to steer a cruise ship. You don't want to just turn the wheel a little and look out the window because nothing's going to happen for a while. And then all of a sudden, it'll slowly turn. Same thing with a power plant or a sewage treatment flow. Anyway, so there are some big issues between digital and print. And one of the interesting things that I've said for basically for decades about catalogs, Land's End did a study way early on, and they found out that people liked pictures more than print. Not a big deal. But in print, there's a it costs a lot, and you got to write your copy to the space that you've got. In digital, on the other hand, you can basically bring up another page, another page, another page. There's no real cost other than the cost of writing good copy. But a lot of times it's easier to write a little longer copy than it is to get it down to just a couple of lines. And so from that basis, almost all digital sales is done in this ugly standard, here's a picture, here's some copy, here's a picture, here's some copy, with no hierarchy of design. In other words, no contextual clues of what's important. So if you're running a catalog, you know, I'd be happy to look it over. So many catalogs have just destroyed themselves when they move to digital and make every product equally emphasized. They're not the same margin. They're not the same sales. And you should give more effort and energy to where you're making the money. That's a principle of space analysis that came out of retail. Okay, moving on. Thank you, Ray, for that one. Excellent. Here's another excellent article. Data frugality, the digitization of consumers' habits and consumption patterns has resulted in unprecedented data collection. So people talk about how, oh, we've got all the data we've got. We know just about, I saw in a machine learning article, we're collecting everything important. No, you're not. You don't even know what's important. Data is not self-revealing. You're collecting way more nonsense and noise than you think. But anyway, the philosophy was any data was good data for advertisers who were afraid of falling behind and becoming irrelevant if they didn't have enough. In this frantic race for more, the industry seemed to have lost sight of what matters most to the consumers themselves. Okay, and so now least amount of data possible to fulfill their objectives should probably be the model. However, as I just said above, the data is not self-revealing. So sometimes you don't know whether it's important or not. A great example is the werewolf variable, which is the distance between the full moon and the shopping. We did that. We built that because a consultant friend of mine dared me to do it. I had talked about it at a conference and said, you know, does anybody collect full moon behavior data? And no one did. Because I wanted a variable that no one would build, but everyone would understand. And so years later, like at least a decade, somebody said, did you ever build that thing? And I said, no. And so I said, okay, we'll build it. Because the guy was a snipe fisherman. Is that right? No. Anyway, he was some kind of fisherman. And he said, the full moon makes a lot of difference in fishing patterns. So we did it. And we were working with Musician's Friend, which is musical instruments and musicians, which are a little bit, you know, different on the bell curve. And it turned out that when we first looked at it, we had about the same number of sales in the full moon as expected. You know, it's about a 15th of the month because we took basically 24 hours on each side of it. And that's just arbitrary, but we thought, well, we'll start somewhere. And it turned out that there was about 1/15 of the sales usually in the 1/15 of the month. So no big deal. And then we scored the customers with that variable, and it turned out that there was only 1/30 of the customers in that window. So fewer customers bought during the full moon of musicians, but the sales were the same, which means that the customers in the full moon period, the full moon werewolf customers, were double the value of the average customer. And that's a powerful lesson. Because now with digital, you could actually target them during the full moon period and see what happens. It would be the next test. I'm not saying it'll work for you. Oftentimes, more complicated group decision type purchases like furniture, didn't work at all. But the more impulsive, the more likely. And so it has worked for several of our clients, but few have leveraged it. Because usually the email department and the digital department is in another building or somewhere, maybe in another continent. So anyway, many third-party cookie-derived audiences are neither accurate nor really insightful, which translates into a lot of work for too little rewards. It's fine. It's great that somebody's finally saying this. This is just amazing. One thing that will help us move in the right direction is implementing a stricter discipline on the way data is weighed and collected. See, one of the fun things about our machine system, it rather than being pure AI, which basically doesn't tell you which variables are getting engaged for any particular selection, our system uses about 500 variables, and you can see whether a variable comes up. You can see how it ranks at the top of the model. You can see whether it comes out, you know, at the edges and the fringes of the model. So you get a pretty good feel of what the value of that variable creation is. And a lot of times, most of the time, it's not much. There are very few really good variables, but they can change from month to month and season to season. And that's why you want to keep a very broad retinue of variables available. And you want a modeling system that lets you know what's working. And very few do. Regression boils it down to only the fewest possible variables, often eliminating hints that could be breakthroughs at some other spot in the model where you see the anomalies. And AI throws everything at the wall, but you don't know quite what it's doing. And most of the time, modelers won't tell you what's going on anyway. Okay, so we should only use information that's recent or rare or reliable. That's a pretty good motto. Use recent, rare, or completely reliable. And the recent mainly gets to the idea that, you know, if you just Googled garage doors, you might be in the market for a garage door, or you might want to fix yours. You know, it's not obvious. It's there's not much context to a search, right? But there is imminence or whatever, immediacy. There is this idea that we can get it. We can get something on your lap right away. Now, that is not as valuable as Bob Hoskins. Not Bob Hoskins. That's a friend of mine. Anyway, a great copywriter once said to me, if there were 30 people in the room and they were all looking for something, the same thing, and there were 5 merchants in the room, the best salesman would get most of the orders. Good point, right? It's true. They're still selling. Just because you're there on the front door doesn't mean they haven't already decided on someone else. Okay, acquiring specific quality data that matches each advertiser's interests and can provide key insights into consumer behavior. So the idea of they may not have bought from us lately, but they might have bought from other, another merchant. That's a really great piece of information that comes from a, like an abacus cooperative where we all put our orders in. And keeping this slim and knowledgeable in looking at each variable will keep you out of trouble with GDPR, CCPA, and CPRA. So there's a great incentive for you in terms of compliance to limit the amount of spurious, noisy variables. By leveraging first-party data combined with advanced contextual and location targeting, for example, we were still able to deliver relevant advertising that will engage our audiences. Right. So you find out more or less the kind of person you're looking for, and then, you know, how are they driving by the store? Makes perfect sense. So Augustine Amon, I'll reach out to you. Love your article. That's enough for today. I got a great article for tomorrow. I promised it today, but, you know, I wanted to give this one enough due. So don't look for all the data. Look for meaningful data. And then look for a modeling system that can reveal the meaning. I'm John Miglosh. Like and share. Your friends will know you're smart. Bye-bye.